The Hegg Bakken Report, produced by the Bakken experts, Hegg Companies, founded in 1945.
With an English degree from the University of Maine and a master's in journalism from Columbia University, our guest this week is Ernest Scheider, an energy correspondent at Reuters. From the Hegg Companies, this is the Hegg Bakken Report.
Hear the latest news from Bakken newsmakers. Subscribe to the Hegg Bakken Report podcast on iTunes at heggcompanies.com/podcast.
From the Hegg Companies, Dickinson, North Dakota studios in the heart of the Bakken, this is the Hegg Bakken Report podcast for the final week of December 2014. The Bakken rig count stands at 173, and West Texas intermediate crude's being traded at $54.73 a barrel at press time. We'll be back with Ernest Scheider, an energy correspondent at Reuters, coming up on the Hegg Bakken Report.
For luxury living at its finest, look no further than Minot North Highlands Apartments and Villas. We offer high-quality floor plans and amenities to meet any need. With underground parking, an indoor swimming pool, a full gym, community rooms, and secured entrances, just to name a few. But you'll have to hurry. The first 33 luxury villas open in July and are leasing now. Don't miss your chance to experience life at Minot North Highlands. Visit NorthHighlandLiving.com or call Jody at 701-418-0100 today.
If you need workforce housing in the heart of the Bakken, Amber Heels Lodge in Wofford City is the answer. Amber Heels Lodge has private suites, kitchen, and on-site laundry, direct TV with NFL ticket, high-speed internet, and more. There are long-term and short-term leases available. Amber Heels Lodge, conveniently located 1 mile south of the latest grocery, retail, shopping, and restaurant development in Wofford City. For more information, go to amberheelslodging.com or call Jackie at 605-336-2111.
Today on the Hegg Bakken Report, we get in touch with a man who is the energy correspondent, or shall I say one of the energy correspondents at Reuters. He's got an English degree from the University of Maine, master's in journalism from Columbia University. Ernest Scheider, thank you for joining us on the Hegg Bakken Report.
Great to be here, Bill.
Touch on your path on becoming an energy correspondent at Reuters, and what led you to your interest in journalism, specifically energy.
Well, Bill, I mean, it's a fascinating topic right now to cover with especially the development of the shale boom across the United States. But I've been covering energy, even before the shale boom took off. I started covering it back in 2007, 2008. And to me, it's just, you know, it's a topic, of course, people always care about. We all use energy. So that sort of drew me in. And it's, it has a lot of science, a lot of technology. So it's always been sort of fascinating to see how these companies do what they do, both upstream, sort of in the field, and sort of downstream, sort of in the gasoline side, the chemical side, et cetera. So it's been a never-ending area of interest.
We should mention that you are boots on the ground in the Bakken, and so you've really tracked the growth that's happening in that region and in North Dakota in general.
Yes. So I do live in Williston, what many people call sort of the de facto capital of the Bakken. Fascinating place to live, fascinating community to be a part of and on the ground, and I'm really enjoying being part of North Dakota. You know, I'm from Maine originally, so the joke is, you know, I'm already used to the weather.
Okay, you bet. What do you see as some of the most significant challenges the Bakken region is facing due to the substantial growth?
Well, that's a bit of a complex question, I suppose, Bill. I guess, it's a commodity play to begin with, and I think anyone who lives or sort of has any sort of leadership potential or leadership role in North Dakota will tell you that, you know, anytime you are relying on a commodity to power your growth, it's not necessarily a straight line. It's, you know, fits and starts. So I think that that does sort of affect your long-term planning. Certainly, there are some smaller specifics that go into that. There's, a well-documented lack of labor there, the supply-demand imbalance has created very, very high salaries there as well. So you see a lot of talent poaching between companies, even between industries. So I would say labor is another sort of specific issue that's going on right now. With the recent drop in crude oil prices, that's made some companies sort of think, okay, maybe we should pare back a little bit. We've seen some oil producers do that already in their 2015 spending. So those are sort of some issues that I think are on the minds of companies and elected officials as they plan.
You know, speaking of that, the media in general has focused a fair amount of attention on the effect of declining oil prices in the Bakken. In a recent story, you talked about North Dakota failed to set an oil production record in October for the first time in 8 months. Tell us about the factors that led to this decrease in production, if you will, Ernie.
Well, there are two main factors that led to that. One, of course, was the oil prices. Oil prices really started to fall around June or July, and these numbers were for October. So you can see as prices sort of fell into that 10th month of the year, that definitely weighed on the producer's mindset. But a second and perhaps larger factor with that, October was the first month that North Dakota instituted anti-flaring standards, standards designed to force companies to collect more natural gas and not burn it off. One of the things that is sort of very strange to me about living in North Dakota is that it's very hard to see the stars because there's so much flaring. So at night you can't really see the stars. It reminds me of, you know, New York City or Boston or Chicago. And that's something you can actually see from outer space. And it's literally burning money and, of course, harming the environment. So the state has instituted very, very tough standards that actually ratchet up in intensity. I'm designed to force companies to collect more. And if you can't collect as much, it's at least 78% of collected natural gas for October. If you can't collect that much, your production of oil is actually forced lower. So October was the first month that those happened. So that's where the lower production, or I should say the lack of growth, sort of came into being there. Companies are saying we have to focus more on collecting this natural gas rather than oil output because of the new regulations.
Will OPEC's decision to maintain their current output be effective at driving shale producers out of the market?
I think that's the million-dollar question. And if I had the answer, if you had the answer, Bill, we'd be... you know, we'd be sitting on a beach somewhere, right? You know, I mean, I had a meeting with Governor Dalrymple last week where he, you know, he expressed, you know, optimism that he's not going to blink in the face of OPEC. And I think what we're seeing across North Dakota is, you know, the four core counties, Dunn, McKenzie, Montreal, and Williams are areas that some of the bigger producers and even some of the smaller ones are sort of retrenching to and focusing a lot of their capital on for next year. So I think you're going to see a bigger focus on those four counties, maybe some fringe areas across the state, maybe parts of Saskatchewan and Montana that have Bakken reserves that looked promising before might not be now. So that's sort of the current mood that folks are reflecting.
We're going to go back to your conversation with Governor Dalrymple in just a moment. But before we do, in your opinion, Ernie, how are the low break-even points of North Dakota wells influencing oil and gas producers' decisions here in the Bakken?
Well, I think you got to look at it in sort of in two spheres. You know, the break-even price would be for existing wells, yeah? So, you know, if you've got a well that's out there right now, I mean, at current prices, it's probably, you know, you're still in making money. So why reduce or why taper off that well unless you absolutely have to? You know, of course, we'd all want to make more money, but sort of that's sort of the logic that a lot of oil producers think into. Now, actually, drilling a new well costs a lot more money depending on your style that you drill the well and how you hydraulically fracture it. You know, you could be looking at $7, $8, $9, $10 million. So that's a chunk of change. So you're going to see companies start to pare back there. And indeed, we've seen companies like Continental, like Oasis, say, you know what, we're going to spend less on drilling in 2015 than we did in 2014. And I think this is important to not forget that there are 650 wells in North Dakota waiting to be fracked, hydraulically fractured. That means companies like Halliburton and Schlumberger and Baker Hughes are 650 wells behind fracking them. So there's a backlog, if you will, of wells that need to be fracked. And whether or not they actually are fracked amidst these low oil prices right away remains to be seen. You've got basically a year-ish after you drill a well until you actually have to frack it based on the geology. So we will see. I think that, to me, is going to be the interesting thing to look at.
Back to your conversation with North Dakota Governor Jack Dalrymple. He recently proposed a two-year budget, which assumes a major rebound in oil prices. Now, is the governor being overly optimistic about the future of shale oil?
I mean, I think that's another million-dollar question there. I mean, he bases his numbers on numbers that come from Moody's, a unit of Moody's called economy.com. He expressed a lot of optimism in them, also expressed optimism and confidence in the metrics that Moody's uses to come to its forecast, basically saying, you know, these are what the experts are telling us. You know, and I think Governor Dalrymple would admit he's not an oil price economist, and that's not his job, but he relies on experts to sort of formulate the budget. So it's not like he just picked the numbers out of thin air. So that's where he's coming from. One thing to remember is that the governor's proposed budget is just that, a proposal, and this is something he's presenting to the legislature, which begins meeting next month in Bismarck, and they're going to have to sort of grapple with this budget and decide if it works for them. Moody's is going to come out with an updated oil price forecast in early February while the legislature is still meeting. So depending on their forecast at that point, it could affect how the final budget comes out. So to be determined all around, but I would certainly say that there's a lot of people that expect prices are going to rebound. They tend to be more on the producer side. Certainly consumers hope that they stay low.
One of your recent stories focuses on an oil extraction tax break that could take effect as early as June of 2015 if the current price of oil remains below $55.08 per barrel for five consecutive months. Tell us about this tax break, and do you think oil prices will remain below $55.08 for the next 5 months, and how likely is this tax break to encourage fracking in the Bakken region?
Well, the tax break is designed on purpose to keep producers producing if prices fall too low. So yes, I mean, to answer your last question first, it will sort of provide an incentive for producers. Will we stay below that for a while? Gosh, I don't know. You know, I mean, here we are. It's Monday before the Christmas holiday, and crude prices are down more than 2% right now. So it, you know, I mean, that's certainly not a positive sign if you were an oil producer there right now. We almost hit the trigger, actually, in 2009. I think people forget that prices went down to about $29-$30 a barrel right around then. So we were actually only a few days away in North Dakota from hitting the trigger. So it could happen again.
You know, this interview is littered with million-dollar questions. I think we're up to $4 million with our next one. Your prediction for the future of oil prices, Ernie, will they continue to drop, and when will the price decline plateau or begin to rise?
Well, you know, I think, you know, people that I talk to say that we might be at a plateau right about now. And, you know, it's sort of, those are, you know, people that, analysts in the field, economists that are saying they feel like it's there. But, you know, I mean, there are people much smarter than I that have made predictions in the past that have proven out to be quite wrong. So, I mean, I hesitate and certainly, you know, hesitate to prognosticate as such. But, you know, I think, you know, like I said, folks have sort of indicated to me they feel like we're at a plateau right now.
Our conversation with Reuters energy correspondent Ernest Scheider continues in just a moment here on the Hegg-Bakken Report.
Are you looking for apartments with luxury, location, and convenience? Then check out Watford City's newest addition, Auburn Ridge Apartments, located off Highway 23 in the Hunter's Run Master Planned Community. Auburn Ridge offers all the amenities of comfortable living in the heart of the Bakken. Auburn Ridge offers studio, one-bedroom, two-bedroom, and three-bedroom units with on-site laundry, direct TV, high-speed internet, exterior decks, private and paved parking, and the options of furnished apartments. Auburn Ridge will have you feeling at home in no time. Auburn Ridge is now leasing apartments for December 2014. Contact Kelsey at 605-336-2111 to find out about leasing options and pricing.
Whether your needs are long-term or short-term, Green Door Business Condos and Self-Storage in Watford City has just what you're looking for. They're open 24 hours a day and are a fully gated premises with cameras and climate-controlled units that will put you at ease that your office and storage items are safe and secure. Green Door Business Condos offers high-speed internet, training rooms, conference facilities, garage, and storage yard for your equipment. Give Kelsey a call today, 605-336-2111, and find out about their great rates and availability. Get on their waiting list now for the end of 2014.
Our guest today on the Hegg-Bakken Report is an energy correspondent at Reuters, Ernest Scheider. Ernest, will the oil producers' reactions to the declining oil prices have a major influence in the local North Dakota economy?
Yes, is the short answer. A lot of these companies provide employment that sort of fuels a lot of related industries throughout the state. So, for instance, in Williston, you know, most of the jobs there are connected to the oil industry, and of course, there's you know, the multiplier effect. So, for instance, you know, you are working at an oil services company, you know, you would spend your money at the local restaurant, at the dry cleaner, you know, you fill up your gas tank, things like that. You know, if that oil service company decides to use fewer staff, fewer crews, that's fewer money in the local industry. So yes, whatever the oil companies do themselves is closely watched by local politicians, local business leaders.
Will the current employment landscape change?
If oil producers decide to continue to pull back, yes. You know, I mean, it would sort of make sense that as mm-hmm. one would sort of lead to the other. You know, are we there yet? I would say no, because of this sort of retrenchment that we talked about a little earlier to these four counties. I think in those four counties, which have been the core areas in North Dakota, sort of you're seeing investors at least telling me that they're moving forward on growth projects for real estate, for commercial investments, because they feel like the demand will continue to be there in the future.
How does the declining price of oil influence the international market?
Well, I think, you know, we're up to $5 million now, but I got to say, depending on whether you're OPEC or not an OPEC, depending on if you're a major importer or exporter, I think you need to look no farther than Russia and see sort of how it affects, you know, the economy there. Yes, it's certainly affecting much of the global economy.
You know, there's a lot of debate ever since this shale play began. Back in, I think it got a little traction in about 2008, and a lot of discussion was about the longevity of the Bakken. And one study by the North Dakota Department of Mineral Resources projects there is going to be 13,500 wells in McKenzie County by 2027. That's almost 11,000 increase from today's number. Yet this drop in oil prices has led to decreasing production. Now, that raises another million-dollar question of how the shale revolution will end. What, in your opinion, does the future of shale energy look like, Mr. Scheider?
I think the I always like to bring it back to technology because it's very interesting when I talk to a lot of these oil companies about the technology that they're using, and they are often very excited to share some of the technological improvements that they've made, whether it's, you know, using different types of fracking techniques or using specific products, whether that be ceramic or sand, to actually do the fracking, or different drilling techniques. And so I think they're constantly tinkering with it, and that tinkering reduces the price of extraction. And I think we've seen that steadily over the past five-ish years since this has all began. So I think that's going to be the continued excitement. That's going to continue to affect the longevity of the shale boom. One thing that is very interesting is that right now, technology only allows companies to pull out, call it 10-ish percent of the oil in a shale well. So when a company like Hess in North Dakota fracks a well, it's only able to pull out about 10% of the oil in there because that's all that the current technology will allow. What will future technology allow? I think that is the interesting question, and I think that will sort of affect the longevity. As technology improves, the ability to extract more oil will also improve, and so I think that's going to be a conversation we'll be having in about 10, 15 years. Can we get that up to maybe half the oil in the well? So I think, you know, the estimates are all over the map as far as the longevity, but I think it's going to continue to be affected by the price and the technology.
In a recent story, you reported on new standards for oil treatment in North Dakota, and according to your story, the new filtering required should add 10 cents to the cost of producing every barrel. Elaborate on the new standards, and why were they implemented?
So I think everyone remembers the Lac Mégantic crude oil train explosion in Quebec. That was a very horrendous activity that was followed on by an explosion in Castleton, North Dakota. And in both instances, trains were carrying crude oil from North Dakota. Many studies have shown that Bakken crude oil tends to have more elements what are called light ends, natural gas liquids, things like ethane, propane, butane, et cetera, that tend to make it, for whatever reason, a little more flammable. So the state of North Dakota decided we need to do something about this. We need to address the safety of crude by rail transportation. So over the course of many months, the state's Industrial Commission, which includes the governor, the attorney general, and the Agriculture Commissioner, had its staff look at specific standards. And you know, long story short, in the end, the Industrial Commission is ordered that every single barrel of crude oil that comes out of the ground in North Dakota must be run through equipment at specific temperatures and pressures to remove these natural gas liquids to basically make the Bakken crude oil safer. So that's sort of the root intention of these new standards that have been instituted out there to make crude oil by rail safer.
Now, will they influence production in a time when keeping break-even points low is extremely important? Is that yet to be seen?
Yet to be seen, but yes, I mean, I think it will have an effect. But the interesting question mark on the other end will be the infrastructure for these natural gas liquids, which needs to be built out. Natural gas liquids are worth a lot of money. They're worth a lot more than even what we think of as quote-unquote natural gas out there right now. These are high-valued, sought after by chemical companies. So, you know, if you can increase North Dakota's limited infrastructure to transport that, to process it even locally, that can actually be a profit center for these companies. It's not quite there yet. Some companies are building more natural gas pipelines, but even more are needed. So I think that, to me, on the other end of the equation is the interesting thing. As that infrastructure gets built out, it could end up being a profit center for these companies.
Just a few more questions for you today, Ernie. You know, there's a lot of environmental concerns that are raised when we talk about hydraulic fracturing, with a huge push on those concerns on social media. Do environmental concerns outweigh the positive economic benefits of hydraulic fracturing?
Well, that, of course, depends on where you are. I guess we're up to $5 or $6 million at this point, Bill. But, you know, I mean, I spent some time living in New York State, and where the governor, Andrew Cuomo, just recently declined to approve hydraulic fracturing. Of course, upstate New York is filled with a lot of natural gas. So some residents there, did not approve of his decision. But then, of course, you look at a place like North Dakota, which for the most part has sort of embraced hydraulic fracturing for many reasons: energy independence, economic independence, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. So I mean, I guess it all depends on your perspective. One of the things that I think is important to keep in mind about hydraulic fracturing is that the industry has done a lot in its mind to sort of safeguard water supplies, to sort of safeguard land. Yes, accidents happen, but at least what I've seen in North Dakota is that when accidents do happen, state officials are very keen on remediation. So they insist prompt, quick cleanup happen. The largest oil spill onshore in U.S. history actually took place in North Dakota recently, and state officials are making sure that it's being remediated, at least what I've last seen. So, yes, accidents do happen, and, you know, it's very much an unfortunate aspect of that. And this is something that, you know, we, especially in the media, have been watching closely and making sure remediation does happen. Does it outweigh the positive aspects? I mean, ultimately for voters in each state to decide for herself or for himself, and that's not really an answer I can, give you.
Are you optimistic about the North Dakota oil industry over the next 10 years?
I mean, I think it's a very exciting place to be right now, and I think there's a lot of excitement that this will continue to grow, not only in the next 10 years, but 20, 30, 40 years, that we will continue to see growth there. This is North Dakota's third oil boom. One in the 50s went bust, one in the late 70s, early 80s went bust, and many people are saying that, you know, third time is the charm. And I think when you look at some of the money that's being poured in there, exponentially higher than anything that it came in the 1980s or the 1950s, I think it sort of feels like, there is a lot of hope, but also based on science and based on oil that's in the ground, that things will grow. And I think when you look at what oil producers are saying in terms of the reserves that they're finding, you sort of see that backed up. So it would all, again, depend on my earlier comment on technology and price. You know, today, Whiting Petroleum, which is the largest oil producer in North Dakota now, as of this month, said that their proven reserves of oil are about 780 million barrels of oil equivalent. And most of that is in North Dakota, because it's the largest area that they operate. So I think that's just it's sort of a mind-boggling statistic when you think about it. 780 million barrels of oil. That's a lot of oil that is just sitting there.
You know, I can tell you and I, we're both fans of technology in this industry. And so to say that in the next decade there will be changes internationally and domestically in this industry, is that safe to say? Be some big changes coming?
Yeah, so the big question, I think, and it's been a question the industry itself has been asking for the past 2 or 3 years, is when will fracking really, really take off outside the U.S.? We've seen it in some pockets in Argentina. We've seen it in some pockets in Canada. But I think, you know, when will it really, really blossom in other areas? You know, France is sitting on a huge pocket of shale. It doesn't allow hydraulic fracturing, but, you know, it has the potential there. Poland, Romania, when will it really take off? That depends on a lot of factors, not the least of which is politics and land rights. You know, the U.S. is, you know, has a unique advantage. Some have said over other countries in that in the United States, you actually, when you own a piece of land, you actually own the minerals underneath it. That's not the same in most other countries. So that sort of allowed the fracking boom to take off here. So it should be interesting to see how other countries politically, legalistically respond to fracking. Like the United Kingdom, for instance, is having this discussion right now, how it can share royalties, how it can share revenues from fracking if it goes forward. We'll see how that plays out.
And our final question for you today, Ernie, we ask all our guests here on the Hegg-Bakken Report this question. Are there any books that you've read that have impacted you personally or professionally?
You know, Bill, I'm a fan of fiction because I spend so much of my time in nonfiction. So I like to sort of get a nice break now and then, but I'd say one of my favorite authors, Marilynne Robinson. She won the Pulitzer a few years ago, and I'd say she wrote several books that I've enjoyed and that I've loved, that have meant a lot to me.
We want to thank you for joining us here on the Hegg-Bakken Report. He's an energy correspondent at Reuters. Ernest Scheider, thank you for your time, and we wish you and your family the best this holiday season.
Thank you, Bill. You as well.
If you want more of the Hegg-Bakken Report, you can subscribe to the Hegg-Bakken Report at iTunes or go to HeggBakkenReport.com. That's HeggBakkenReport.com, where you can get all of the transcripts and audio for past newsmakers in the United States energy industry and much, much more. Follow the Hegg-Bakken Report on Twitter at HeggBakkenReport or on Facebook. Until next time, thanks for listening.